Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, it is the Red Men Podcast. It is Tuesday and we have got our returning hero. Well, back from wandering the Scottish Isles and finding himself again.
He's in my good books because he brought me a huge black pudding.
Yeah. And
I didn't get a bottle of one, thanks.
It's alright, it's fine.
Last.
No. Okay. You passed me a coaster for me tea without me asking.
This is why I'm here.
It's just a good man.
Yeah.
Just a very good man. Yeah, welcome back, Ross Chandley, and welcome back, Chris Pajak, as well. Hi, Chris.
Hi, mate.
You haven't really been anywhere, but it's just nice to see you.
Unless you count the two-day hangover, in which case I wasn't really here.
Yeah, I know, you were here in body, but not really in spirit yesterday.
Yeah, it was a struggle, that. Don't drink bubbles. Prosecco, Carver, it's just not a good mix for me. I'd say that.
What was the occasion?
What is a good mix, Chris? In that sort of volume?
Well, I think my problem is I drink the same speed whatever I'm drinking. Mm. So, like, anything that's lager-based, I still get a mess, but I last a lot longer.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm drinking at the speed of a pint with, like, Prosecco and Carver and champagne and stuff, then that's when I really end up in trouble.
Yeah.
And I did.
Well, then. And just for clarity, where were you?
Golden wedding anniversary. Afternoon tea.
Oh! That's standard. How many of the sandwiches that you made did you eat?
Probably a lot.
Or maybe not.
No, I definitely not.
To soak up the bubbles.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Right, yeah, we're going to be talking about Liverpool's finances. So, Swiss Ramble, one of the most interesting Twitter accounts going, has done a thread on Liverpool's finances off the back of the transfer window. And because there's no footy, so we're stuck in this horrendous mire of still talking about this when really Liverpool just playing football and winning football matches would make everyone feel a little better about all these things. We're going to do it because it is interesting. We had a couple of kickoff questions we're going to get to in a minute, but I just want to draw everyone's attention to something. Ross has had a couple of weeks off, a week off from this, but we've been nominating three categories in the FCAs. There is a pinned tweet at the Redmen TV right now. What you can do is the tweet underneath it, you can just copy and paste that. So it says, I'm voting for the Redmen TV in the FCAs, but # best in video, # best content creator, and the RNTV Women's Pod is up for the best in women's football as well. So basically, all you have to do is go on there and copy and paste that. And just to clarify as well, so the only channel where you can't talk about FSG or they block you altogether. Oh. Right, Sal. So yeah, it's not true. You can definitely talk about it, but if you're a knobhead, then you will get blocked, absolutely. But yeah, vote for us in that. We're up against Arsenal Fan TV, and that's always a bit of an uphill battle. So yeah, vote for us to win and Ross to keep his job. Kickoff questions come from Half Space 8, sport related. How do you think the squad will be rotated between Champions League and Premier League games over the next 3 weeks? I think this is really interesting, and we got a little inkling in the Chelsea game as to sort of Klopp's thinking, Chris. You know, the fact that Elliot starts in that game tells you that he's not just there to make the numbers up, he thinks he's a major part of the squad. We've still not seen Gomez yet, we've not seen Konate yet. Thiago's being eased back in, Henderson's been used probably slightly more than he would have liked. How do you think he's going to do it? Because that's going to tell a lot about what Klopp's plans for the seasons are.
If you base it on previous seasons, he kind of puts a bit of a second string out in the Champions League games. I think the Premier League's still going to be the priority, but I don't see it being so much of like a second string in the Champions League games. I think it's going to be stronger in the Champions League games than what we've seen in previous years. I think you're still going to make changes. I think you might see a Gomez and, for example, a Konate playing together if he feels confident enough that they're going to be good enough together. I think you're going to see Tsimikas certainly involved in one of those games, be it the Premier League, be it the Champions League. I'm not sure you see Nico, but it wouldn't shock me to see him in one of the Champions League games. It really depends on that first result in the Champions League, doesn't it? I think he goes slightly stronger in that one and then weighs the competition based on how well you do against him.
I've got the fixtures here, Ross, just to give a little bit of context to this. Obviously, we play Leeds on Sunday, AC Milan's midweek, followed by Crystal Palace. So in terms of what Chris is saying there, you can understand that. Milan, I don't really know how to gauge Milan, to be honest, because in my head, they're still the best Italian side, but they've very much not been that for a long time. But with Crystal Palace, not like Crystal Palace are any you know, easy, but Crystal Palace at home, you would imagine the preference would be placed on Milan over them.
Yeah, I find it difficult to separate what I do and what Klopp would do, because my imagination every time we're in the Champions League is to go all out, win your first four games, and then you've got two dead rubbers, and that never happens at Liverpool. But it's always the last game that we need something. But, you know, I don't know how to gauge AC Milan, but also I want us to start strongly in the Champions League and put a start down. But it might affect, of, you know, if we don't beat Leeds, does that mean we go stronger than we wanted to against Crystal Palace to get to more points on the board? Who's available? Like, I'm just catching up this morning with, like, what's going on with Naby Keita, but like, Taki's injured, like, some of these players, that the condition that they come back in. And also, I don't think this is a set way. I think you're right, some of those fringe players, bringing them in, we might depend on, like, well, Thiago's playing well, so playing while he's fit and available. Or same for Joel Matip, we always say that he's fit and available. Playing, you might be hesitant to play him, you know, twice a week or whatever, but you might not have an option. And then if he does get injured, well, for the next set of fixtures, you've then got Konate and Gomez and Rashid.
I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as Chris, as right, here's the Champions League squad now, and here's the Premier League squad. It's going to be situationally determined. So he probably will go stronger for Milan, you know, if you had to preference the two. But then you go a bit further down. We got Brentford on the 25th, followed by Porto in midweek, and then followed by Man City at the weekend. That's the week where he goes probably slightly weaker in the Champions League, but make sure he's 100%, because he'll have to have everything ready for the Man City game.
Yeah, he does. And look, you've got to also have the players that haven't really been massively involved. You've got to get them up to speed quickly, because you are going to be playing two games a week. So you need to get them involved as early as you can, to be honest with you. So whether that be Leeds, whether it be Crystal Palace, if you are going to go strong in against AC Milan, I expect the likes of Thiago, I expect Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to feature in one of these games. I've already mentioned the defenders. Don't think you're touching the goalkeeper unless you have to, but it wouldn't really surprise me if you did throw Kelleher in for one of those games. Not a Premier League game, maybe the Porto game, something like that, I'm not sure.
I mean, you've got the League Cup game there against Norwich coming up as well, so I would imagine Kelleher will get that, unless he's done something, in which case it'll be Adrian, you know, and that'll be fun. More social media around it than anything else, but that might dictate.
I mean, where's Kate Jones fit into all of this? Yeah. Not even a player that we've mentioned. He was a regular in the first team last year, and you know, obviously you mentioned Taki and stuff like that, so you're not sure 100% where he's going to be involved and stuff. But
James Milner as well, you can chuck in that twice. It's the pleasure of having a squad and being able to use it and kind of pick and choose. And what was last season just a mess. He's got a squad for a reason. He's got to use it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think it's a really interesting question. And at this point of the season, the answer is we don't know. And because he does preference the Premier League, because you can't afford to drop points in the Premier League, but you can in the Champions League. Now, obviously, we all say you want to go out there and win your first four, but it's a group stage. I think we forget this every single time we come to it. We overreact at how important it is. Now, it's very useful, particularly because of Atletico. What you want to do is go to play Atletico Madrid with 6 points on the board already, and I'm sure that will be in the mind. But he'll think, and again, Jürgen Klopp thinks of this squad differently to how I think we do at times.
Well, look at the way that he played Jota last season in a dead rubber game.
Yeah.
You know, you just said a minute ago, you want them to be dead rubber. Well, Jürgen didn't. Like, not that he didn't want them to be dead rubber, but he didn't use the squad the way you'd expect the manager to use a squad in a dead rubber, because he's not thinking about the next game. He's thinking about the next 5-6 games. And that last Champions League game, yeah, you go to two games a week in the Premier League and stuff. So you've still got to balance your squad, even if they are dead rubber games.
Yeah, you want to get to the point where Liverpool comes strong now is in December, because that's when everyone else plays two games a week. And Liverpool are just used to it by that point, and they've got a squad of people capable of doing it. And that's where we fell down last year, is because our injuries were so bad that we didn't get to rotate properly through the summer. That's Kurt Jones plays like every game in that run. We haven't got the midfield options or the defensive options to do things. Fingers crossed we have now. Obviously, we know Minamino's injured at the moment, which is not great news. Javi Elliott picked up a knock, but I think he had that prior to going away, so there's the hopeful apparently he'll be back. But yeah, fascinating, really interesting question.
Bobby's
there.
Still injured as well, isn't he?
Bobby, yeah, well, yeah, we think so. But
I don't think anything's been announced on Firmino, has it?
Yeah, they've kept that one. There was all those rumours that it was like, it was ages, and then the word on the grapevine was it was
2-3.
Yeah, it was nowhere near as bad as was kind of being mentioned. Haspers actually just said, actually, no non-sport related question. Favourite place you visited abroad for non-football related trips? I don't really have too many non-football related trips these days. But
it's Disneyland, isn't it? Disneyland.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. I went twice when I was a kid, and I think I went again when I was 18, and I equally just turned into a big kid again. It's like you just separated from everything. There's all the Star Wars stuff, man. I'd love it, yeah.
Yeah, Universal Studios.
Yeah, it's a fucking boss.
In America.
All the food as well. The food's incredible.
Yeah. Chris?
It's probably Berlin. I really like Berlin. Like, it's a quality city. I went there for a stag do as well for my brother's stag do, so that was a belter of a weekend, and it's just a really cool place, yeah. Like Germany.
Belter. Kedar Janawade with another one says, would you rather live in a world where Gerrard didn't slip against Chelsea and we win the league in 13-14, keep Suarez, but then give Rodgers a new contract and miss out on signing Klopp, or stick with the current version? And he says, too much Marvel What If for me. Yeah, I mean, anyone who watched, and I won't, no spoilers, but the most recent Marvel What If, this could be an example of that kind of universe. Chris, I'm very much a man that thinks that, you know, every step that you've taken gets you to where you are today. So I wouldn't change the past because I like kind of like where I'm at. But that's a tantalising thing, you know, maybe a world where Gerrard gets that league title. We get another season out of Suarez.
Yeah. If we keep Suarez, we win the league when Leicester does.
Yeah.
Because everyone was shit that year. And Suarez would have won that league, so we might have had the same as Manchester United already.
That's a good point.
So
we wouldn't miss Klopp necessarily, because we wouldn't know. We would have known we'd missed him.
Yeah, but we're probably not winning the Club World Cup or the Champions League, because I don't think Rodgers is anywhere near as good as Jurgen Klopp. So, and also, you know, that house was built of glass, really, wasn't it? It wasn't a particularly stable house, whereas Klopp has built us into a bit of a force. So I'm sticking
Suarez
with
Suarez on
got.
The bench at the Bernabeu the next season. Brendan, we're doing warm-ups with Glenn Johnson, Raheem Sterling and Steven Gerrard and Phil Coutinho.
But there is a little side of me that goes, I'd just like to live in any world where Gerrard didn't slip.
Yeah.
Because I just feel so sorry for Steven Gerrard, and the fact that he would have got the Premier League and he would have captained the side to a Premier League is a really nice thing. But yeah, I'm sorry, I like Jurgen too much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care for Steven Gerrard's happiness, he's fine.
He's fine.
It's short-term success with long-term pain under Rodgers if you're doing that. I like who we are and where we are now. Yeah. Taking that, it's pretty easy for me.
It's an interesting point, isn't it? Because your point, Chris, I feel the same way about that, is that we burned shortly but brightly under Brendan Rodgers, but there was no sense that was like...
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't very good at the transfers, to be perfectly honest. And Liverpool had a lot of turmoil behind the scenes that wouldn't have been fixed. All that would have happened was Brendan Rodgers would have got more power and then had more length of rope with which to hang himself in more spectacular fashion further down the way. And there's a chance that meanwhile Jurgen Klopp ends up at like Arsenal or Chelsea or Spurs or something, and then all of a sudden, having had a few years of Suarez, at which point he probably decides he still wants to move on anyway, you're then fighting a Jurgen Klopp team and being really jealous looking at him and all the things they've got going on for them. So no, I'd give it to Gerrard as long as I could not know, you know what I mean, not know what I'd lost. Like Martin McFly coming back and realising the world's changed, but he remembers what it was like beforehand. If I could do that, it's all in one way or the other, because I'd never know what could have been.
We'd also have got to experience, you know, seeing them lift the Premier League in front of us.
Yeah.
Which would have been really nice.
There's also a chance Suarez bites someone else and gets a lifetime ban from football. And then that's that. So, yeah. We're going to talk about the Swiss Ramble finance thread in a moment. But Connor S has sent a super chat and said, thanks for doing this, lads. Can understand the disappointment. Can't handle the conspiracies. Everyone loves a good conspiracy, don't they? Especially at all times around Liverpool and their owners.
Did you get the check from John?
No,
still not gone.
No, he just slung it into me PayPal instead.
How's your paying currency conversion fees?
Mate, whatever. Listen, you don't go to your paymasters and say, excuse me, can you pay me? You know, you should be sending
friends and family, shouldn't he, so no one gets charged?
You just take what you're given when they come to you with that kind of stuff, like, you know what I mean? I'm not a big enough or strong enough character to step up against that. We are going to be talking about that in a very brief moment, but we have got a Jordan Henderson book and DVD available right now. Let's have a little look at that. Hello everyone, we have just released a fresh batch of author-signed editions of Hendo 10 Years of Red, our limited edition commemorative Jordan Henderson book. The first two runs of those sold out pretty quickly, so we decided to do one more batch, but make sure you get them quick because they are flying out the doors at the moment. A perfect gift for a Liverpool fan in your life, or, you know, just treat yourself. Their book is incredible. We're very, very proud of it. Incredible cover artwork and interior artwork by Yoni Weisberg, some of the best artists as well on the Liverpool scene have all contributed great Jordan Henderson unique pieces to it. There's in-depth articles, features, memories, photos, and a hell of a lot more as well. Get your Jordan Henderson 10 Years of Red book right now at redmenmerch.com. Cheers. Yeah, that is available at redmenmerch.com. And as hinted at before, we've got a DVD of our three-part documentary series as well, which is also on there. So if you want to start gearing up towards Christmas, I know. I mean, you can go in and buy a chocolate Santa Claus in Tesco's, which I always think is a bit weird and wrong. But there are some people who are hardwired to get prepared early. And for those people, I'm talking to those people. I don't mean you need to fundamentally change your character, because I'm not doing my Christmas shop until October. But if you're that way inclined, then you can get your Christmas presents box there in terms of the DVD and the book and mugs and also an amazing array of t-shirts as well and other stuff at redmenmerch.com. The Swiss Ramble delve into Liverpool's finances. He put this thread out. Now, the Swiss Ramble guy does this all the time. He's done a number of Liverpool threads over the years, and they always end up being a good discussion point in the office when they do. He does other clubs. One thing I thought was fascinating, which pointed to the absolute state of Liverpool's online sort of angst community, is that he had to put a tweet out pretty much straight afterwards saying that he was blocking people who were being dickheads.
And he'd never blocked people before.
Yeah, never blocked people before, but I've put a thread out about explaining Liverpool's finances and now he's having to block people. I think we can all appreciate the situation that he's in.
Oh, yeah.
Fair play to him.
To Maya.
It's a hellhole. I put a tweet out before I went away and accidentally became founder and leader of Middle Reds before I went away, and it's like,
what the hell's it?
I don't even know what a top red is.
But it's like it comes from both angles, and to his point of the reason why he did it, obviously he's put all this really hard work in, and people are making assumptions and not reading what the work he's done, them firing abuse, and that's part of the problem. If like it's, I don't care if someone doesn't like the owners or they kind of want them out or they don't agree with what he's put, but no one wants to have the conversation anymore. I know the language that's used is like, I don't mean in terms of swearing, it's like how people approach a conversation. It's just wrong because someone might say something to you and you get your back up about it. It's not like, you know, I'd like Liverpool to sign another midfielder rather than why haven't we signed anyone? Or like they're fucking paying your wages. Like you're not going to engage.
I've not spoken to anybody who didn't want to sign at least two players this summer. Like literally nobody. But the way that some of us are being portrayed is just mental.
Yeah. Because I want to tweet it us and then I reached a reply and went, yeah, I agree. What do we do now? And it's like, oh, sound. It's like having a go at us.
Yeah, it's madness, isn't it, to be honest
with you? Yeah, you have this. And I did a big chat with this about this with Neil Jones last week about you end up with this,
the people, the, this rises up and then this rises up to meet it. And the truth is that both are just a bit over the top. And I've had this with football players. Like, I found myself doing this last season in our little Redmen family WhatsApp group over Ozan Kabak, because there was a couple of lads in there. It was Steve and Sam.
It was Steve.
Who was slaughtering Kabak. And I was like, and I was defending him. And I was like, after like a couple of replies, like, I don't really care enough about him to be doing this. But I just won't hear. Like, really, I just can't be arsed.
But I had the same with you last season with Nat Phillips. I thought you were just being really sly on Nat Phillips for like 3 months between sort of December to February. And I was like defending him. I'm like, I think he's good. I really do think he's good, but I don't think he's the best centre half in the world. Yeah. You'd hear me talk sometimes, and I would be, because I'm just annoyed with your opinion.
And that's where we got with this. But again, it's just really, for the vast majority of exist in this realm where we turn social media on just to see what's going on in the world for a bit of escapism. You're getting drawn into this like pitched battle, this imaginary pitched battle with digital slings and arrows. And this guy has unwittingly just walked. Through. He's taken it, he's gone, oh, let's do something about Liverpool this week. Yes. And he's opened this door and he's walked in with this fresh pile of information. He's like, getting nailed from
it's
both
sides. It's Christmas stars. Day, he's walked into no man's land in the middle of World War II and he's taken the football and everyone's gone, fucking you!
Yeah.
Bang!
Yeah, honestly, like, I feel so sorry for him, but look, let's get into it in terms of what he's done. If you haven't seen this, we'll put the link in the description underneath. You can just go to @SwissRamble on Twitter and what have you. And I've got it up here for the video viewers on the podcast, so we can kind of scan through a couple of bits and pieces. But Chris, having scanned through it, what was your sort of key takeaways from it?
Liverpool are ran differently to the other big clubs.
Yeah.
That's the main difference, isn't it? You know, you can see that, and it's borne out over the entire thread of just how differently Liverpool are ran. And, you know, when you think back to what FSG said when they first came into the football club about making it self-sustaining, that kind of shows in the accounts, and Liverpool are self-sustaining. You just have to look at the amount of debt that's been ran up by other football clubs compared to Liverpool to understand that. So I think that for me, it's really encouraging, because there are a lot of things where the commercial side of things have grown, and we've closed the gap on Manchester United and stuff like that, and it seems to be the big difference is how they've leveraged more money, the other clubs, compared to Liverpool not leveraging more money. And so I can kind of understand where the people who are very much FSG out are now coming from, because they look at it and they go, well, they're leveraging debt. I get that, and the owners aren't putting bags full of money in, so that would annoy me. Like, I think Liverpool would be in a much stronger situation if the owners were putting more money in. But that's not to say that I can't also see that Liverpool being a good business and being ran really well actually allays a lot of my fears from 11, 12 years ago when we nearly hit the wall.
Yeah.
Because you just have to look at what's going on with Barcelona and Real Madrid to know that model, quite frankly, is largely unsustainable for a lot of football clubs. Yeah. Even Barcelona and Real Madrid, it's unsustainable. I'm not sure it's unsustainable for Manchester United, because the revenues are so high, but Barcelona and Real Madrid revenues are so high, and it's just been ran absolutely terribly. So what it's actually done is probably open my eyes a bit more to that side of things, because I'm reading the words and I'm thinking, well, why haven't they put more money in and all that? And I understand the reasons why. But yeah, that's the big difference and the big takeaway for me.
Yeah, I think this season was just it felt like an opportunity for Liverpool. Like, and I get, in most cases, people have been hit by COVID and, you know, kind of paying out. And Liverpool's match day revenue, I think, is in the top three with some of the, you know, I think it's Arsenal, Manchester United and them, in terms of what they've lost. But it just felt like also we're kind of going, okay, we understand the squad size. We need to get rid of, you know, some non-homegrown players. We've got Rashid Shaqiri. It just felt like a chance to kind of capitalise on the market, as it were. You know, the right person might not have been there, and it gets self-sustaining, but it just felt like maybe there was an opportunity to take a gamble in the market. I don't mean a gamble on a player and just spending money for the sake of spending it, but like, people's fears are before behind, and you see Chelsea spend £90-odd million on whatever else. But we shouldn't really look at other clubs, because they're not really our issue, but they are at the same time. If they're competing with us in the league, I agree with everything you said, and I can see both sides of the argument, but it just felt like maybe you need to go and take that extra gamble just to make sure that we are there, we are at the top.
But the problem with that, from the Swiss Ramble thread as I see it, is that Liverpool are so reliant on player sales, and the player sales is what didn't come in this time around, which left them almost handcuffed.
Yeah.
they've not got the money because the player sales weren't there, and that's what they've been using to fund their transfers.
That was my 100% my takeaway. That was my big. I mean, you read all through that, and there's a lot of like quite heavy technical jargon towards the back end of it. But what is 100% clear, and it's not news. I've known this. Sell to buy. And now sell to buy means something different to different people, because it could be done sell to buy or it could be sell to buy. And like, you know, and look, most of us are living in a sell to buy world, and people who live within their means and don't have, you know, aren't in debt are in that sell to buy world. And that is, again, that's called sustainability. That is, you know, you buy things in and you move them on, and you spend that money on getting your next things. And ideally, if you do it right, you buy low, you sell high, and you make money to improve what you're doing as you go along. It's the market of go and buy your starter house, get to a point, get a few years, build up some capital in that, then move to another house, and so on and so on and so on, to the point where you can constantly upgrade what you're doing. No shock. And I think your point is spot on there, because we all knew this. And it's worth pointing out, by the way, it's 10 years of accounting covered. It only covers the back end of the title winning season. So it's got a little bit of, it's got that 10 game lockdown or 9 game, whatever it was for us, period there with no fans in stadium, where there was a revenue drop, but it doesn't count an entire year lost. So whereas Liverpool made £61 million profit over 10 years, I think if you then added that, if you even move that forward a year to 10 years, including last year, or you did the full 11
could
years.
Could have been £100 million loss.
Exactly. It's going to be a lot less than that. And the player sales thing is absolutely key to that. And why wouldn't it be? We drive a shrewd bargain, and we always have done. Why Liverpool haven't got tons of cash and tons of money to spend is because we haven't sold a big player in the last 4 years. We haven't sold a big player since Coutinho. We haven't for anyone for really, really juicy money. And I'm not expecting us to sell £140 million players all the time. But I think that's as much of a part of our business model. So what have we done instead? We've doubled down on wages instead. We've just tied those guys down to new contracts. Because we can't sell them, we're going to give them a new contract. And then that adds money to your operating costs, which means that the money you've got to spend is less. And I can be angry about that, or I could not be angry about that. I'd be angry about that if it meant Liverpool were in loads of debt and we were having to throw players out the window and cancel contracts and stuff to balance books.
It is what every owner in the league should be if Man City and Chelsea didn't exist. Like, my United are their own case because they're completely different than what they did in the 90s or whatever. But, like, everyone's angry and going, and I've just done it myself. I've pointed at Chelsea and Man City going, well, they can do that. Yeah. We shouldn't live in a world where those kind of clubs exist in the Premier League, because it's not a sort of fair market, is it? And you can ask for different owners and ask for, you know, if people want people like their owners to come in, and that's fine.
We have this conversation with Toffee TV, and it's dead funny because they are all like the evil red shite, and now they're ruining it. And they talk about that, but they go on about like the ladder's been pulled up. FFP pulled the ladder up on Everton because Everton have got enough money to go and compete with everyone in the world because they've got billionaire owners. But because of FFP, they can't spend that. But then they're like, well, we want it to change, and it's like you want to be able to freely spend. You actually want the football landscape to be worse. Yeah. You just want to be part of the elite is the argument with that. You know, there's no honor behind their desire for that. And again, cool. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure we'd all like to be in that world, really. If we didn't want to scratch beneath the surface, really all we want is our team to be able to be competitive every year. I mean, they have been. In recent years, certainly. The fears are whether that's sustainable in a world where Man City, PSG and Chelsea exist. And no one really knows that. It doesn't look... That's what I'm seeing, Chris, is a lot of that, is people saying, well, the solution is the FSG. We need rich owners if we want to carry on down that route. And I guess that does kind of make sense. Or they need to engineer a way where they can put more money into the club. Or we've got to trust that the process will continue to work, which it might not.
It's going to be difficult for them, certainly, especially with Klopp's contract coming up in a couple of years' time and all that type of stuff. You know, for me, FSG got an absolute steal when they bought Liverpool Football Club for the amount that they bought Liverpool Football Club. And it wouldn't surprise me if they sold for £3 billion and turned £2.5 billion profit on the sale of Liverpool. And that's what they are. I make no mistake about it. They are businessmen. I don't think that, you know, Manchester City, your PSGs, your Chelsea are businessmen in the same sphere anywhere near as FSG. It's a party piece. There's reasons why Manchester City might be bought by owners who they've been bought by, the, you know, sport washing and all that type of stuff. Abramovich is just a party thing. It's just something. But he's actually built quite a good model there with Chelsea, mm-hmm. one that you can look at in the accounts that the Swiss Ramblers shared and gone, wow, okay, well, they're miles better at us than player sales. They've been hoovering up young talent for years and years and selling them on for ridiculous fees. So in some ways, there's something where he's actually done it really well and he's still managing to invest. I think that's, you sort of want an in-between, don't you? You want someone with 100 billion quid who kind of likes footy, kind of loves Liverpool Football Club and wants Liverpool to be the best in the world, not for anything but trophies. Yeah. That's what you want them to be. You just want them to want trophies, not money. Unfortunately, we've got owners who need to make a profit on this investment.
We want billionaire.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Scouser. Effectively, you know what I mean? You know, someone who's got a deep passion for the club, but of course, the problem with that is that it doesn't always work quite well that way because, I mean, it's not quite this, of course, but like the Barcelona model, and this isn't that. But when you lead to a world where you've got an individual who is susceptible to pandering or feels the pressure more acutely from fans, it works both ways. So you can help keep them on the straight and narrow, but Barcelona have just been chasing the tails, trying to play the PSG game. And trying to compete with Real Madrid.
I don't think that's what Liverpool fans are asking for. No, not to that extent. It's like 145 million Coutinho, Dembele, Griezmann. Like they just have to get Griezmann back because they've messed it up so much.
No. But the point, and but what I mean is that if we had an owner who was susceptible to that and who had the financial clout to do that, you could quite easily end up in a situation where you're just throwing money at people. Because let's be honest, put any one of us in charge of Liverpool, like, we'd all do it. We all want to do it. But would we necessarily be right for doing it? And it used to say, it's my money. I'll go on, I will go and spend. I mean, again, let's look at the Everton situation. They had loads of money, and what did they do with it? They absolutely wasted it on all kinds of fucking shite because they didn't get the right people in.
And that's the sort of crux of it for me, isn't it? I mean, look at Barcelona and Real Madrid, never mind Everton. They've had loads of money for loads of years, and being well run is more important than having loads of money. Now, you can be well run and you can have loads of money, which is something that City have proven possible. Because they are. They've done it for the best part of a decade now. Yeah. They've been right at the top of the tree every single year. They've invested wisely. They've got one of the best managers in the world. They've got some of the best players in the world. And they've got some of the behind the scenes absolutely spot on. Liverpool are still investing in that side of things. They're still investing in Kirby. We're not seeing the benefits of Kirby in the first team yet, which we will see borne out over the next few years and stuff. But unfortunately, you need patience. And it's one thing that football fans, myself included, that don't have.
No one has it. And the transfer window exacerbates that massively, so it doesn't. And you're right, the existence of Man City and Chelsea, because I did a video yesterday on the channel where I compared the squad from the start of the Champions League winning season to this. So rewind the clock 3 years, stack the two squads side by side and just look to see where Liverpool are at. And actually, in terms of squad depth, Liverpool have literally like four whole players. We've got four more available footballers in that squad than the squad that got 97 points and won the Champions League. So, like, you know, there's a context to everything that we sort of look at. But of course, you can't. When all the conversation around it was, well, what about what City have done? What about what Chelsea have done? And it's very hard because you should be able to compare. And you can, in some regard, but also you
it's just people's fears, isn't it, of being caught up and, you know, kind of dropping points. And again, we said loads of what happened last season. I think people still think that's going to happen again. You know, you mentioned Kirby there. We've not seen the benefit of it because he hasn't got injured in it at some stage last season. So people going like, I think we all wanted a defender last year when Lovren went and we didn't do that. And now it's, we haven't got a midfielder. And people's concerns just being, you know, you said it then, exacerbated by what happened last season and going, well, Man United have just bought Rafa Varane, Ronaldo and Sancho. Christ, if we lose two players, are we then far behind them? I don't think it works like that.
You know what I've got no time for, though, is this, like, oh, I just wanted a £30 million player. You want to fucking, how boring is that? I bores me this whole, like, I'd rather people fucking kick off that we're not playing Mbappe, because at least it's something. You know what I mean? It's like this, like, oh, I'm not saying we wanted Mbappe, I'm saying we want to go and buy a £30 million striker. It's like, no. Let's go for it, be all in or not, because it's like having a fucking weak handshake, you know what I mean, or like playing snooker with a rope. It's like, if you're gonna do it, go for it. At least it's exciting. Liverpool don't need another average footballer. It's not going to make any real difference, significant difference to this squad. Liverpool need to be in the market for the best players, and the point is that we said this the other week, there's only a handful of them on the planet, and I don't know whether Liverpool are genuinely actually in the market for these footballers or not, because the PSGs, Cities and Chelseas might have inflated to the market to the point where we can't compete with this current model. But I also see this world where how Liverpool have conducted themselves in recent times. We didn't buy a centre-half last summer, which was a gamble. We then didn't buy Canati in January because we couldn't buy Canati in January. But they wanted Canati, so they waited till the summer to get Canati. We did that with Virgil van Dijk. We could have bought a centre-half, but they knew who they wanted, so they waited. And that's very difficult. And it's easy for us to sit back now, but we've been doing this, analysing this shit for fucking over a decade now. And we have these arguments every transfer window about what Liverpool didn't do. But what Liverpool started to do in the last 5 years is get it right over a longer period. But you don't notice it because it's not as sudden and it's not as dramatic. But the plan being in place is all culminated to this. Like, you don't notice your kids growing until you take a week, you go away for a few days and you come back and like, Jesus Christ, you've grown an inch. How did that happen? You don't notice your hair growing. That's what Liverpool are like. It's not dramatic. It's like watching paint dry at some points. It's not like someone comes in with a big paint book and throws it at a wall and you go, wow.
I think that's the problem, though. I think that's what the FSG out sort of one, isn't it? It's like, they think like watching Liverpool is like watching paint dry at times.
Liverpool business is. The business of Liverpool is. It's dead boring.
Like, but you say you don't want a £30 million player, right? Let me just extend that to £40 million, right? We've got all of our four strikers for under £40 million.
Yeah.
So what's better? Spending £100 million or buying the right player?
Yeah, exactly.
And the money doesn't matter at that point. Andy Robertson, £8 million.
Yeah.
Like, Virgil van Dijk, 75. It doesn't matter if it's the right player.
It's true. The only, I'm being churlish. The point is that where Liverpool are at now, it's that the chances of that being the right sign and get slimmer the better you get, because you haven't got that. You're not building anymore. Liverpool can afford to blood Andy Robertson in because they're a top four contending side. They're not a league challenging side. Once you're at that pinnacle, you've got to swap your best parts out for other boss parts. And Salah's massive to this, by the way. We're going to do a bit of Salah contract talk on the Reds News Roundup show tomorrow, because the report he wants £500,000, and that's ridiculous money for where Liverpool's wage structure is at. But is it? But the point is, Salah's huge in this, because if you lose Mohamed Salah, you're losing 30 goals a season, and you can take a gamble. You could go and buy another Jota, and that might work perfectly. And laughing, and Jota kind of disproves this to some extent. But really, what you need to go out and do is go out and spend
£100 million on someone who's going to go and bring you 30 goals or as close to damned guaranteed as you can do that. And we've never really had to do that yet because it's all been the build.
The point I'm trying to make about it being the right player and the price not mattering is that Liverpool have done that. Mm. Liverpool have already done that with Virgil van Dijk and found a guy where, yeah, in an era of buying a lad for £3.5 million, Joe Gomez, and buying, you know, Andy Robertson for £8 million, and they've still gone out and gone, these are the holes that we need to fix, and spend £65 million on Alisson or whatever, or £75 million on Virgil van Dijk. It's just that we haven't had to replace anybody in the forward spaces yet.
Yeah.
So, and the business model would suggest they're okay to do that if the funding is right behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And that's the major concern now, because what you're saying is absolutely spot on. Going back to the Swiss Ramble stuff, if we've lost over £100 million over the 10-year period, that doesn't put us in a good position to go and spend £100 million. Now, if you'd have followed the curve forwards and taken the pandemic out, we might have overtaken Manchester United in revenues last season. You don't know what the crowd's being in there and everything, sliding doors, all that type of stuff, of course. Liverpool could have been in the market, but
yeah,
they've gone like that to get there, and unfortunately they've had the legs taken off them with the pandemic, as a lot of football clubs have, but a lot of football clubs have reacted in different ways.
Yeah. Well, the way Liverpool have done it, and it's mentioned, this is where it starts to get into the slightly complicated nitty-gritty, and it starts to border on my grasp of it all. But when I know people, literally nothing makes anyone drier than talking about player amortisation, but the point is that Liverpool have got less cash reserves because you buy something. So the way it's done, you buy Mohamed Salah for £35 million, you break that value down over the length of his contract. If you then sell him halfway through that contract, you actually, for the same amount that you bought him for, you actually make a 50% profit on him, because that player's lost the value in your books. And that's where Liverpool, by not selling anyone and replacing them with those new players, means that the value of Liverpool's assets has dropped, because those players become less valuable over time. But you replenish that by selling Mohamed Salah. And not only do you get a huge profit, but you get a brand new shiny asset for whatever you paid for him. And that means that your club's more, you've got more liquidity, and you've technically got more cash in the books. And that's where Liverpool look worse than some other football clubs. But it is because it's all built on buying and selling and replenishing, and they've just not done that. And again, it's not sexy, but this is them reacting to it, and that's for good or for ill. That doesn't change. That's not going to make anyone go, well, that's fine, I'm happy with the ownership now, or oh no, I should turn against the ownership. It just kind of backs wherever you're at, really. But to the point, what happens in the next 2 years is going to be massive. And the problem is, right now, is there's people starting to gear up. And I would contend, and people don't believe this who are in this camp, but it's a very, very small but very vocal minority of Liverpool fans. And it feels bigger online because most of the sensible people have gotten so tired of the noise that they just got off from the conversation. But this might be a good time to try and grab it and nip it in the bud, because we won't know for 2 or 3 years whether it was a bad move or not, because that's the way that Liverpool move. We could be sitting here in 2 or 3 years with another league title and another Champions League or more than that, but we could equally be back in a mire where we're just battling for top four because we haven't had the cash reserves to refresh the squad the way it was needed.
Yeah.
Which I understand, to your point, it's fears.
Yeah.
It's just, for me, it's not enough reason to go to the barricades, because again, for me, I think the squad's better than it was 3 years ago when we went on our best run in the Premier League era. So that's hard. I can't unpick that from my feelings.
No. The other concern, which isn't really a conversation for now, but it's being had online, is we're talking about the sustainability of the model that we've got. You mentioned there players like Andy Robertson, you know, how much we bought them for and what we made them into. What happens after Jurgen Klopp? Is that model sustainable? Can you bring someone else in who can get the best out of those?
I've got an interesting comment here on that, actually. Ashley Frith, who's been a Wunderkid member for 15 months. Well done, Ashley.
Wow.
Love to all at Redmen. What worries me is if we change our model, did Liverpool lose their soul? I don't want us to turn like City and lose who we are. Well, that's an interesting point in terms of the model and what we do moving forward. I think we can do our own heads in with this stuff to some degree, can't we? You know, you can get lost in what's the worst case scenario on what happens if we don't do X, Y, and Z. The answer probably is, and to the point about losing the soul, what did Man United do when they lost Ferguson? Well, they tried to replace him in spirit by having his
nominated heir and
another
David
Scottish
Moyes.
Manager.
No, no, but like he was hand chosen by the man, by Alex Ferguson himself, which gave him time, and they gave him that 7-year contract or whatever it was as well, so that Man United, who there's like, let's stabilise, we're not going to be changing the manager every year, and then they completely lost their heads and changed the manager within a year. But what have they done since then? They've thrown money at the problem. They've spent and they've spent and they've spent to maintain the illusion of still being at the pinnacle of footy, when in reality they've been, even though they've had a couple of second place finishes, they've been nowhere near the league title, they've been nowhere near the Champions League, and they've won a couple of, they won the Europa League and they won the League Cup or whatever in that time. But that's what Liverpool might need to do when Klopp goes, is have a bank of dough there to make up for the shortfall in the absence of Jurgen Klopp. Because if it's Pep Linders, does he carry the same level of authority? No, but if you then go out and spend 100 and something million pounds on one of the best footballers on the planet, then the perception remains the same.
I'd definitely much rather give Klopp the money to spend than keep something in the bank for someone new. And let him pick the fellas, because you know, he's done it before. So that's certainly something that I'd have umbrage with if we had a pot of money for the next guy. But you know what? I think it will be. Someone like a Pep Linders. I can't imagine it's going to be Steven Gerrard unless he absolutely just kills it for the next couple of years.
His next move's going to be massive, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the succession plan's big, and we want to go. I want to go back to the boot room in some ways. You know what I mean? And I like Linders, and I like the way he talks for the games that he's been in control of press conferences for and stuff like that. But the big concern is, can you do it as a manager? Yeah. Because we've seen number twos who can't.
Yeah.
They might be the best number twos in the world, but they're just not management material, and you don't know until you know.
There's something there. What James Milner does next is be an interesting watch as well, because I said this the other day, he's got pure Ronnie Moran vibes for me. I could see James Milner having his own, like, you know, his own part of the AXA training centre named after him by the time he dies. Because
he's got
you can
a door
see
named
him,
after him, isn't he?
Yeah. You can see him barking orders of people for that time. But Adam Canu with the Australian dollar, $10 super chat. Thank you, Adam. Club has run very sustainable since FSG. They're not perfect, but as Craig always says, there's a lot worse out there. I don't know who Craig is, but that's cool. I like winning while earning it by smart transfers and great coaching. Same as that. And I've also seen people saying, like FSG, as some said, FSG have turned us all into accountants. And again, this is the point is, they've turned us into accountants because we've on this platform, and I feel a degree of responsibility to talk around the wider issues rather than just be like, it's all shit and say, because there are loads of outlets, and there are Liverpool outlets who just flow with whatever the general course of the feeling emotion is, and that's cool. And we do a bit of that too, absolutely. It shouldn't have turned the average fan in, because you shouldn't give a shit about this. All you should care about is that Liverpool have got a good team on the pitch and win football matches, and that goes.
Be careful saying that. I got absolutely hounded over the weekend for saying something similar to that.
But the point, fair enough.
Did he not take the context of the whole conversation, Chris?
I don't know. I saw a video of me and I didn't read anything, but I'm assuming I was getting hounded.
Oh, whatever. But that's the point. Is it shouldn't matter, because when you've got, if you're delivering success on the pitch, everything else is just background noise. And again, it's loud at the moment because it's done footy. And because we've been conditioned to think the transfer window's a big thing. You know, like, I think people wanted us to win the transfer market, and we're 2 years on from me making a big joke video about that. Like, we laughed, winning the transfer market's not a thing. Well, it is a thing. It's become a thing by just people saying it often enough. We're 2 years, 3 years from Ped and Baz from Toffee TV going on Sky Sports News and saying that Everton won the transfer window. How did that work out for them?
But if you look at what Arsenal have spent. Arsenal have won it. Arsenal. Look at who they bought with the money.
It's noise and nonsense. And I get it. You know, the problem is like, it's like you're running a race and you might be the best. You might be the best athlete in the world, but all of a sudden, other people come along, and you can't stop other people catching you up. There comes a point where, and there's only so maybe, and the problem is, I wonder if Liverpool are just at the limits. We've been making this point for a few weeks, haven't we, Chris? But to carry the analogy, there's only so fast a human being can run. There's a point at which there's limits of what someone can do, and there's a case that Liverpool might be able to get to do a bit more, but it's not significant. there's not loads more Liverpool can do to get better, because to the point they've improved the squad. They've improved on the squad that got 97 points, won a Champions League, then got 99 points. So, but the fear is there's people breathing down the back of your necks, tearing up behind you. There's nothing we can do about that. No. Really.
You've just got to go out and win football games, and that will stop the noise. And that's where it's borne out. Like, look, for me, and I've said this so many times now, footy is what I enjoy.
Yeah.
The football is what I enjoy. I don't enjoy the transfer markets. I don't think you can improve your team, of course, but the manager's more important for improving your side. You can have a really great coach. I'm gonna say Mikel Arteta is a really good coach, because Pep Guardiola spoke about him as one of the best coaches he's ever worked with. But if you can't translate your ideas to your football team, which is the rumours are that Arsenal players, even in training, can't understand what Arteta wants.
Yeah.
And having watched Arsenal play, that looks to be the truth.
Yeah.
You can be one of the best coaches in the world, but if you can't get your ideas across, it's fucking irrelevant. You can have the best ideas in the world, if you can't get your ideas across, it's irrelevant.
And
you can buy the best players in the world, but if you can't get them to fit into your system, look at Pogba. Still doesn't really fit into Manchester United's system. Clearly one of the best footballers in the world. You've got to, everything's got to be right.
Yeah.
Not just one portion of it.
Exactly.
And Liverpool have got the transfer market for the most part right over the last 5 years, and they've got the team right, and they've got the players right, and they've won trophies in those 5 years. And yes, I would like Liverpool to spend more money. Yes, I would like Haaland and Mbappe playing at Liverpool, but it's not going to stop me enjoying watching my team play football. It's not going to stop me supporting them either.
It's just with this, again, it comes back to fear. There's a fear that Liverpool go back to this long wait for more silverware. And the thing is, that exists everywhere, by the way, because I gave you another point. Manchester City, you've got more money than anyone, and they've got the best manager in the world, and they can afford to spend £50 million on a fullback and then bin him off the next summer because he's not worked. And yet, they haven't won a Champions League, and Liverpool have been to twice as many European finals and won a Champions League, which they haven't. Liverpool beat them to the title. So it's, you know what I mean? Even when you've got all that, it's not a guarantee. And of course, Man City fans are more miserable than... They're like Evertonians, but with money.
I saw a thread of tweets that someone had put out saying he was a Manchester City fan. He gathered a load of Man City fans that were moaning about their transfer market and how much money they spent in the past couple of years. And I'm like, fucking hell, if they're moaning, we've got no chance.
Everyone's moaning about something. Look at Manchester United. They've bought some Bosch players, but everyone's still whinging about the DM.
Mm. Because of things like TalkSport and a lot of these neutral... Supposedly, I've talked about this all the time, like these neutral social media accounts. What happened was, and this is why Twitter's more unbearable than it was 10 years ago, is because lots of sociopaths who understand the analytics of how you make tweets bang and therefore how you can make money out of it started creating over big social media accounts. So now you've got like accumulated accounts trying to banter fans, and it just makes your life all a bit more miserable, but it adds a load more pressure to everything you're doing. And then again, you've got TalkSport who are hiring these ex-player biffs who come on and they know what they're doing and they know what they've got to say, because they know if they say something a bit controversial, it gets spread. So you spend your whole time with just looking at fires, you know what I mean, and either deciding to put your hand into them or avoiding them, and either way it's causing a reaction in you, which all adds to this, exacerbates this feeling that something wrong is happening. There's not a football club in the world who wouldn't be happy with where Liverpool are at. There's 99% of football clubs on the planet who would give anything to be in the situation that Liverpool are in, but we're dead jealous, or some of us are dead jealous, because there's a couple there who have got a bit more financial clout. And there's nothing wrong with wanting more for Liverpool. We should always want the best for Liverpool. But it just feels like too much. I get it. When Liverpool are competitive, they've got some of the best players in the world. We've never been in the world where we've had this many world-class players in the team, ever. Ever. We've at best had two or three in some of the best teams we've had. 2005, Gerrard, Alonso wasn't world class at that point, but he was on the way to being it. Maybe Hippier.
I said this last week, Paul. It's a good problem that we've got at the moment. Yeah. Is we're now keeping our world class players through the prime of the year.
Yeah.
And 5 years ago, we stopped selling our world class players.
Yeah.
Now we've kept them through, and they're too old.
Quite like you both.
5 years ago, you wanted us to keep them. Now we're keeping them. And most importantly, the players want to stay because they believe that they can win things. Do you think Salah would be here if he didn't think that he could win the biggest trophies at Liverpool Football Club.
That's why there's a reason why Coutinho, Sterling and Torres in particular, and even bloody Emery Chan.
Suarez.
Suarez. Yeah, definitely. All had Michael Owen had a bit of that as well. Gerrard nearly. All had their heads turned because Liverpool couldn't guarantee it. And now we've built it. And now we can't guarantee it, but we can guarantee competitiveness. And if that's enough for the best players on the planet, why is it not enough for fans?
More.
Connor S says we might compete with City and Chelsea on the table, but they aren't owned for the same reasons as us, rightly or wrongly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly the point that we were saying there. It's mad. It's just one of those things. Not wrong. And again, just to clarify, no one here doesn't want more. No one here wants it to go back to what it was like. But also, there's a degree to which I think there's a collection of some supporters who actually didn't live through the 30-year wait. So, I mean, and let's be honest, it was sound. You know, I much prefer this now, and that's, so I've got that point of comparison. It's well better now than it's ever been. It's the best Liverpool side has been in the Premier League era. It is, and it's the best time to be a Liverpool fan. There's all the things around it, going the game, best atmospheres. We've got the best atmosphere consistently that we've ever had, ever. And people can't back to the 80s. Ask anyone who went in the 80s, it was shite. And it was dangerous, and it smelled like piss. And now it doesn't, less so, certainly. all good things. We've got all that things going for us. It's fucking brilliant. Everything around it's great. It is. I said this before, and these aren't mutually exclusive things, because you can technically, because the owners exist out there, you could have Man City's owners, and you'd still have our culture. And all that kind of stuff. So that perfection does sort of exist. But Man City have got so many of the things that make us special they don't have, and they would give anything for. Look at their coach greetings, for God's sake. Smattering of applause as people get off the coach and an announcer shouts their names, trying to gauge some interest. As to quote Stephen Tries, putting baby blue toilet roll down the stands to try and look like they've got some sort of deep European history with the tifos and all that. Chelsea
got
the plastic
Kane Ugly statue outside as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got the Kane Ugly statue. Yeah. They've got that Freezer from Dragon Ball Z statue out there, which looks really good as well. You know, good on. No, but again, they're developing history. Great. That's sound. I've got no problem with them doing that. That's absolutely fine. Chelsea the same. That's why you ain't got no history thing. I really like the fuck off Chelsea FC part, but the you ain't got no history bit's done now, because they've got European Cups and they've won loads of leagues. So like, Sal, let's find something new. But we're fine. I just, yeah.
It's the conversation thing, isn't it? And like, this is what's good. Like, is it they were used to and have a chat, but like, no one wants to engage on social media anymore. And you can't have that debate that we've just had.
Because you can't, because it doesn't exist on 280 characters.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to find somewhere to have a debate, go into the comment sections of, you know, Red Men TV, and talk about this stuff. Go into the comment sections here. It's not a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it might be live, and a lot of people are really good at having the conversation live, but it's not in the same way that Red All Over the Land was.
But it's impossible to carry tone in text conversations as well, anyways. And so you might think someone's dead angry and they're not, and then you then rile them up by having a go with them, and then you left it, and then you sat at home. And was that it? Where we've put a tweet out and you've bitten at something, and then you sit there on edge waiting for the response and planning what they might say and blah, blah, blah. It's just fucking exhausting. It's easy to just have a chat with people in real life, and that means getting out to your local supporters clubs as well,
but
you know,
also,
and chatting to people face to face.
People don't care. Like, genuinely, like, I remember asking you this a couple of months ago, and I'll ask anyone who's watching now, why did you put a tweet out? If you can just answer me that.
Something to do.
Is it literally just to force your opinion on somebody else?
Interaction.
And a few people might say interaction, but it's honestly, it's a bit like, why? I don't know. I've actually really struggled with why I tweet.
I found, and again, this is just for me, but the amount of times I've gone to tweet something and then I've deleted it and put my phone down for 5 minutes and then not thought about it. And it's an interesting model to see whether you're asked enough. And again, I say this because it's become, there's a culture now. We said this, we've done this for 11, it's our 12th year now. It existed differently back then. And I did a video on my channel. I was like, how old were people when we started on YouTube? And there were people saying I was like 6 and 7 and 8. Is that
there's people now who've grown up with Twitter and it's part of their daily culture, whereas we remember it not existing, so I can happily not use it. But there's people for whom you go on and it demands something. You feel obligated to put something out there, but no one ever feels obligated to go back and prune the bad opinions, or unless you get called on it sometimes, to go, oh, I was a bit angry there, actually, I'll just delete that. And then that feeds the cycle and over and over and over again. And again, that's my point, is that I did the Red Sea podcast on deadline day, and I got the generalized sense that there's just this feat, a lot of people have just been egging each other up. But if you're not in the room where that's happening, it's not a real thing. But if you just live your life in the online Liverpool world, it feels horrendous, but it's actually not. It doesn't feel that bad. We've had this conversation. We all feel it. It's like a sort of nuclear device being open. It's like you get radioactively poisoned by opening social media accounts. But when we're just talking around it and having conversations, and I say chatting to people in the co-op about the footy, it never feels anywhere near that bad. And some people will go, again, it's cognitive dissonance. People will treat that. They presume, rather than go, maybe I've judged this wrong, they'll go, oh no, they must be wrong. It must be Top Reds, or it must be, oh, Scousers are the problem, or it must be, oh, Chelsea fans call them go the games, of like, you know, like, because you go the game, you're making these people seem wrong instead of actually changing, trying to analyse your own take on it. And I'll be honest, I've been doing it the other way. I've been looking at the FSG out stuff and going, have I missed a trick here? And I understand it. I understand every point made. I just don't feel it. This doesn't resonate me to pick up my pitchfork. It feels a bit much, because we didn't have that energy in much worse situations.
If Liverpool were ninth in the league this season and there was no investment and there was none next season, I'd be there. But the fact of the matter is this, we're 3 games into the season. Like, we are nowhere near finding out what this Liverpool side is today.
Yeah.
We don't know what the other sides are going to be like. Because, look, I mean, Chelsea have signed really well, but we beat them last season with half our players missing.
Yeah.
So when you bring them back in and you compare them to the signings, we should still be ahead of them.
the problem, you know, is, I mean? If Liverpool finish ninth this season, you get a bunch of a told you so, and that's what Twitter's turned into. Yeah, but it's turned into point scoring. And
it doesn't matter, exactly, though. It doesn't matter to me whether somebody called it earlier, because I don't care.
But what were you going to do? What changes that? And I said this the other week, I said, you know, if you want to protest, we'll cover it. I'm not going to not cover it. We've covered all the major events. When the mainstream media weren't covering the Hicks and Gillette process, we were nobodies, and we were still there trying our best to shed light on it. And then someone said, because there was this FSG out protest, it was just a generic blank thing. And then subsequently there's been a meet at the Arkles or whatever and do it. People do it great. I'm desperate to see and meet these people and speak to them and see their banners and flags and see what they can do. Because I think we've seen protests. I saw thousands of people march on Anfield to support Rafa Benitez when the rumours were that Hicks and Gillette were going to boot him. I think we played Porto maybe in the Champions League, and it was before that game. And I wasn't even at the match. I was watching the game on the telly. I drove to Anfield to go and be in that march, and then I drove back from Anfield to watch the match at home because I didn't have a ticket, because I felt so passionately about that. If people feel passionate about that, people will turn up. If judging by the reaction online, thousands will turn up, and then we'll see, and then we'll know whether it's a big deal or not.
I mean, I must admit, I've kind of lost my trail of thought there.
Okay, I've got a point actually while you have a little recovery. So Rowan S says, I agree with you lads about FSG outlot, but the majority aren't asking for Haaland or Mbappe, just simpler, small signings to keep our squad competitive, which regardless of finances, we should do. And this is why I would point out, go and watch the video I did about has the squad been weakened yesterday, because again, to point, I stacked our squad up player for player alongside the side that started 18-19, which is how they got 97 points and won the Champions League, and then got 99 points the next year with only Adrian and Elliot added to that. And we have the squad, even the squad players are better. Now, you could, again, there's some debate over whether some players are in slight decline. There's some really strong cases that some players have gotten loads better. Trent being prime example, Robbo being better, Alisson, Fabinho, you know, there's good examples of this. But in terms of this depth thing,
Liverpool's depth at the time, so you might argue that our front three were better because they're a bit younger. Firmino just scored goals, which is great going into that season. But our first understudy to the attack starting the 18-19 season, anyone? Daniel Sturridge.
Oh, Daniel, yeah, of course it was.
Daniel Sturridge was our first understudy, and no doubt over his actual ability, but that was his last hurrah at Liverpool. We got a few games out of him. He started PSG, scores, but I think we got two or three goals out of him in that campaign. The first understudy for Liverpool's front three this season, Diogo Jota, who scored 16 goals for us last season. The next understudy below that, now you could argue still Divock for Divock, and I would argue that Divock now is probably worse than the Divock we got that season, but Divock had come into that season on loan at Wolfsburg. We didn't know whether he was good enough, and it wasn't until the back end of the season that we got those iconic goals out of him. So yeah, look, I think Divock's miles past the best. Our other understudy for attack, Rian Brewster, who was injured for the entire season and made two substitute appearances, Barcelona in the Champions League final. And our understudy, our replacement for Rian Brewster in that squad is Takumi Minamino. So don't tell me Liverpool haven't got strength in depth. You might not think Takumi Minamino is a worldie, or you might not think that, you know, that all these things, but we've defo got more depth in that squad than we had. And even again, in terms of, you might not think Nico Williams is brilliant, but Nathaniel Klein was the understudy, who on paper was brilliant, but he was crocked. He'd had a serious back injury and his career's never been the same since. We got one good game out of him against Man United, and then we loaned him out for the rest of the season and forgot he existed ever since. I get the point. It's just, there's a righteous fury that isn't backed up by, I think there's been more thinking done on the opposite side, because I think we're all going, are we missing a trick here? And so a lot of people have gone, well, I'm going to look into it. I don't think there's enough looking into it gone in on the let's set fire to everything and start again stuff. And there is, by the way, I don't want to tarnish everyone and paint with one brush, but I'm seeing a lot of really basic statements that aren't borne out in reality.
My understanding of it, I mean, I've been saying for weeks Liverpool got a better squad now than they've had. I think a lot of the players have improved, kind of like what you're saying. But the really interesting disconnect for me is when I'm going the game, I'm not having these conversations. Mm-hmm. And that's not for shutting them down or anything like that. But I've gone the game the last 2 weeks with two different fellas. I've met up with probably four or five people each time for a pint before or during or something like that. And this FSG out conversation doesn't exist where I am. Mm-hmm. And it's not been a thing. So I go to the same veg shop every single week and I chat to the fella about footy. And there's places that you go each and every week where someone will talk to me about footy, normally the same guys. Fella in the co-op down there, you know, met him on Monday or whatever it was, Friday, can't remember. And it's always, should do more, shouldn't we? Yeah. But they're fucking good, aren't they? Yeah. And that's just almost the long and short of the conversation. Yeah. And I don't know why.
I think Cal Sampson's the only one who's slightly more...
I had a conversation with Cal last week. He made some really great points. Not enough to pull me over and make me think that, you know what, you're right. But certainly some points that I'd not considered before that I took away and thought about. And that's good. Mm-hmm. You need that sort of discourse with people to be able to get better.
It's got to be a discourse though, hasn't it? Yeah. And Neil Jones made this great point, is that the attitude of people who are... because there's a small community and most of them got muted or blocked years ago for me because they've been dicks for a long time. It's how you conduct yourself and how you talk about things. If you start going around calling people out, this is how we ended up with Brexit, because we started calling very reasonable people who voted for Brexit for reasonable reasons. We started calling them basically Nazis, and we started calling them Tories, and we started calling them and racists, when lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of them weren't. They had one or two key issues that was the reason why they went with that, but we lumped them in with that because ultimately they ended up lumped in with all of those people. And instead of having reasoned discourse, everyone just rises up and becomes horrible with it instead of having a and this is what happened with this FSG out thing, is you've got, it's being fronted by nasty individuals who may or may not be real or not. Some of them might just be doing it for a laugh. They might be kids who are having a laugh on the lunch, because we don't know, because they're all largely all faceless people and we've got no proof of who they genuinely are. There's a lot more people who are just the moderates and people just here to have a laugh, who have got faces to their accounts, is what I've discovered. if you've got a point, don't be dickheads about it, because it makes people turn off to it. You're going to get muted, and then what you have is them going, oh, people are blocking us because they don't want to have the debate. We just don't want to get abused. People just want to have the conversation. We'll have the conversation all day long if people want to talk to us. I get stopped, to your point, I get stopped outside Anfield by dozens of people every time I go and have a chat with people. If anyone wants to talk to me about stuff, I'll listen to it and I'll have the chat. But you've got to do it in the right way. So you protest and you protest in the right way and you have that conversation. Let's talk about it rationally. But it that leads to that rise of... And there's no such thing as FSG in us because nobody really gives a shit. But there is. I'm sure you could find hashtags to prove this, by the way. But in reality, no one really is that. But it leads to you, this moderate side coming up, who either go, look, it's fine, or you're over egg how good it is. Again, Ozan Kabak. It's like, no, he's dead good. Is he, though? You know, he's now playing for
Norwich. He's not as bad as what you think.
Exactly.
But that's not going to win you over.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, exactly. That's it. It's just the narcissistic echo chamber of social media making it worse. And the thing for me, this small minority who are making it worse is all the hallmarks of the, like, COVID deniers. Somewhere, if you're a COVID denier, you heard someone's opinion and went, that's for me, that. And then you blew it up from, you've been reading other people's things. And that's my point about this, is that there's this general feeling through social media about this stuff, which I'm not getting in the sense in the real world. I only get it when I peel back this curtain. I don't know where they're all getting it from and who they're reading. Who was the person who they thought was cool enough to do it? It's like people end up going to shops in their pyjamas. Someone did it once and went, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. I find it mad because it doesn't reflect the
real life.
The real world, yeah, mad. DBS. With the $7.99 Australian dollars in the last few years tells us this squad has 85 to 90 points in it. That's good enough for me to get excited. Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable point there. And then Khaled Hussein says, have you covered how much we pay? Oh, I think agents. I think that's meant to be per season. No, but it's an interesting point that Liverpool pay more in agents fees than pretty much anyone in the Premier
League. Is that what that massive other costs thing was?
Yeah,
was wages. And,
but again, that's a part and parcel of how Liverpool operate. They don't spend. They woo players, and you woo players in a variety of ways. Sometimes you have to woo the agents to do it, and it's a bit of a murky way of doing things. But if it means you save money in transfer fees because you've managed to convince the player that they need to come to your club. It's very Barcelona. But again, Barcelona without us absolutely spunking the money senselessly after it. But we might do that with the Salah contract now. Salah might be about to become our Messi. And in 5 years' time, when he's well past his prime and we are in an absolute financial hole, that will be. We'll all be wrong, won't it? Right, I think we've done pretty well there, to be honest. MB Brown, who's been a member for 2 months as a first team, says mid long term planning has got us this far. You'll never walk alone. Yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty spot on. Look, the footy returns. Hopefully, we can all get back to focusing on that and enjoying the best Liverpool side in any of our lifetimes. That would be great, wouldn't it? We have got a competition running for you right now. We've got, I've been told it's complicated, and it is complicated sometimes. There's 3 tiers of YouTube memberships, which are all fine, and you guys who are members over here are all great. But we do have the RedmenTV.com, which is our Liverpool streaming service. There's 2 tiers on there, Club Captain and Club Legend. Club Captain gets you access to the full wealth and breadth of the content that we make, documentaries, features. Club Legend gets you loads of extra bonus things like free merchandise every month and discounts. There's going to be free tickets to live events, which are coming back very soon indeed, and a whole host of other bonus fees. And you get a boss competition every month. This month, it is a signed Michael Owen print. And some people might go, Michael Owen, Simon, but for a lot of people, Michael Owen was a very big deal for us. So if you're not totally turned off by the idea of Michael Owen, if you're a Club Legend subscriber, you can get there you go. You can enter into this competition.
You forgot to say life size.
It's life size sign cut out of Michael Owen. But yeah, you get that and a whole host of bonus things. More details on that will follow at the end of the podcast. But gentlemen, thank you very much. I think we've sorted that FSG problem out, right?
No.
I'll go back to Twitter now and tell you.
Internet. Oh yeah, that's going to be horrendous. But yeah, if you want more, do check out the video I did. And I did another video on my channel talking about Liverpool's transfer policies and all that kind of stuff, which hopefully make you feel a bit better about it as well. It's got stats and spreadsheets, which is very much outside my wheelhouse, but that's why I think it's good. More podcasts next week. More to come later in the week. See you all there. Ta-da.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.